This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. What's the key to staying youthful in spirit? And what did Jesus mean and what did he not mean when he said that we should come to God like a child? This is episode 15 of season 2 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. Welcome to both our listeners and our viewers. Unhurried is meant to be sort of a deeper dive into what we talk about each weekend, a chance to live with it a little bit, to process it, to reflect on it, to maybe cover some of the things that we don't have a chance to cover on Sunday morning. Today, our topic is how to stay forever young. And before we're done, I want to give you 4 traits that we can learn from children. But, Ryan's here with me again in the studio. Hey, Ryan, a big night last night. I got to witness something that was pretty unique. Tell everybody what happened last night. It was a great evening.
Yeah. Well, Kyle, Kyle Duggan, one of the other pastors here at the church, he and I played together on a hockey team, and our hockey team won the championship last night.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Woohoo. Got the trophy, got the photo. Yeah. I was there. What was the final score?
It was 9-6, which sounds like a lot, but in roller hockey, it's not a lot.
Yeah. It was also pretty close.
I mean,
it was competitive until the sort of the second half, you started turning on upshift a little bit.
Yeah. We pulled away a little bit, but I mean, they're great hockey. They're the defending champs, so they have that pedigree for sure. And they're a great team. And, we know some of them cause we get to compete against them.
Yeah.
And, they're great guys and it was a good game.
Yeah. So you probably wouldn't, say this without me prompting you, but you made a handful of goals last night.
I did. Yeah. I scored 4. That's
which is most you've done.
Right. What's most I've done in a game. So that was a lot for me. So
we had a whole cheering section from GVC staff there.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna take a little credit for it. We're gonna take a little credit for your good game. You know, we were inspiring to you.
You know, as the Padres say, they have the best fans in all of MLB, and I feel like the Night Owls, we have the best fans in all of roller hockey.
Absolutely. Yeah. Come on now, we were representing.
Exactly. Yeah.
We were there. It was a lot of fun. It was so enjoyable to be out there watching that.
Yeah.
And I've been playing tennis, you know that.
I know.
And I don't think I mentioned on here that I was in a mixed doubles tournament with my daughter.
Yes.
Have I talked about
that? No, I don't think. I think we've talked about it offline, but yeah.
So that was just a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't win the championship or anything like that,
but
it was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was like a legitimate tournament.
Right.
And she and I got to play. It was mixed doubles, and we did better than we thought we would.
That's good.
So that was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, there's always two sides to a puck. So, you can be on either side, the winning or the losing side.
Yeah.
So,
two sides to a tennis ball too, or two sides of the court.
Exactly.
But we did get one victory that day.
Nice.
And we played together really well. It was much fun.
Yeah. That's almost, I feel like, sometimes more important.
Yeah.
Is if you get a good chemistry together and you get a good group of people together, or with you and your daughter, that's almost sometimes more beneficial than walking home. I mean, of course you want to play to win, but
just to do that with my daughter is so much
that's
fun.
What I'm saying, just to do it with Kyle and then having my kids and our kids get to watch us still play, I feel like that's so cool. It's just such a cool memory.
Absolutely. I'm gonna treasure the photo we have of us together that day.
Yes.
It was really awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I have a great update today. So this has been a story that's been developing. A few weeks ago on the podcast I mentioned that I've said for a long time, Unhurried is supposed to be like sitting down having a cup of coffee in a unhurried way, thinking about what we talk about.
Right.
Well, we said, hey, we should just for fun. I was just joking. We should do some coffee mugs for swag.
Yeah.
Turns out someone heard that. Someone donated the funds, one of our listeners, to get those coffee mugs, and we now have them.
Yeah. Should we show them off?
Yeah. So if you're watching on YouTube, these are the Unhurried mugs. They're really nice.
They're so nice.
They came out so great. Yeah. They're meant to look like kind of camping mugs, I guess, but to me they're a lot more sturdy than a lot of camping mugs. So I like the look. It says Unhurried on it and both sides, and it is large enough. I mean, you poured iced drink into yours,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I got a large drink from Ostra, and the whole thing went in there. I mean, I don't think I took one sip before I poured it in. It can hold a lot. Yeah.
So it fits the idea of Unhurried, because, you know, this is like a big cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. You can be sipping it for a long time. It really kind of goes well with the Unhurried idea. Also, my favorite feature about it is that it is left-handed friendly.
Okay.
Here's what I mean by that. What? Here's what I mean. So you can hold it left-handed, and it says you can read, and you can hold it right-handed, like a lot of people do.
Right.
And you can read it. It's on both sides.
Yes.
If you go home, or right now, if you're listening at home, go look at your mugs.
Sure.
This is the right-handed world that I live in.
Yes, it is.
Your mugs. Almost all of them, if they just have something printed on them, they're printed so that if you hold it with your right hand, you can see it.
Right.
These, because I'm left-handed, are left-handed friendly.
Right. See, I appreciate that. You know, that's nice. I will say it is kind of funny that I have not drawn this comparison or before, is that I actually play hockey left-handed.
Oh,
so,
you do?
So hockey sticks can go, we're going to get lost in the weeds here, but hockey sticks can go two ways. It can either be right-handed, where the curve will bend in on your right hand,
okay,
or it'll bend in on the left side on your left hand.
Does that give you an advantage?
I think it does.
Yeah.
I've always thought it did. Most hockey players, I would say probably more than 50% of hockey players are right-handed. And so, because most of the world is right-handed.
Right.
So you're right-handed, you put your right hand on the bottom, and that's how you always play. For whatever reason, it never felt comfortable to me. So I started playing left-handed when I was a kid, and I've never looked back.
Wow.
You know? So that's my only thing that I do left-handed, you know? So,
well, I drink coffee left-handed.
Well, you do everything left-handed.
I do everything left-handed. And I have to say, this is nice.
Yeah,
this is nice having the left-handed coffee. So we are, you know, we're providing these for right-handers and left-handers.
See, we think ahead.
We're thinking ahead. We're trying to be as open as we can to right and left-handed people.
Yes.
Here's the deal. So for our listeners and viewers, here's how you get one.
Cool.
They're free for you. We're just going to give you the swag. We want you to get the word out about Unhurried, but you have to mention it to either me or Ryan. So somehow, I mean, if you're not local, you can maybe send us an email, but otherwise, just mention to us on Sunday. Say, hey, give me my mug. And then
good morning, give me my mug.
And then we'll give it to you.
Nice.
And I can't wait to see people carrying around in the lobby.
I know.
Getting their coffee on Sunday morning, drinking from it.
Yes.
And then if people come up to you and say, oh, where'd you get that?
Right.
You have to say, well, you have to listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't, you know, that's the only way they can get it.
Yeah. Does Cindy still have a shelf in the kitchen with people's mugs on it?
Yeah. I think there are.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could use it and then leave it here if you want to, and then bring it back. Put your name on it for sure.
Because these are going to be collector items soon. They'll be expensive on eBay pretty soon. So, yeah, you definitely want to put your name on it.
It's like the giveaways that they have like at the Pods games, you know, and then you go on the next day on eBay and you're like, I'm not spending $100 on a Tatis bobblehead. Like, that's crazy.
Somebody is, though.
I know, right?
Yeah. So, I love it. All right, so I'm very excited. Both of us have the mugs here, and thank you. The first one went to the donor. I tracked him down.
Very
gave
nice.
Him,
yeah.
Gave him
thank
one.
You very much.
Thank you so much. Then now we've got several more to give away to whoever asks.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. There was a buzzing about the lobby. One of our listeners asked me about it on Sunday.
Yes.
But I didn't give anything away yet.
I know one of our listeners too was like the idea of the unhurried merch, you know, of like, you know, trying to find new ways to get us new merch and stuff like that. So I'm like, cool. Yeah, let's keep it going.
I love it. All right. Well, we've added a new feature today to our podcast, and that is listeners' questions. This was recommended by Kyle. Kyle, when he was part of the podcast a couple weeks ago. So we've got a listener question that came in.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have that feature at the end.
Okay.
So
I think that's great.
We'll save it to the end for the listener question, but hopefully every week, if we get listener questions, we'll include those in the podcast. And it kind of fits well with the series that we're in right now on this podcast, which is the questions of Jesus. These are the questions that Jesus asked us. So not our questions, but his questions of us. And we've been looking at those questions that have prompted us to think more deeply ourselves. Questions he asks individuals, but still are good for us to work through ourselves. And this week, the question comes from Matthew 21:16. And Jesus challenges the chief priests and the teachers of his day with this question. He says, "Have you never read, from the lips of children and infants, you, Lord, have called forth your praise?" And it's a kind of an obscure question that is only in one of the Gospels that has this here in Matthew. But I don't know if you've ever heard the expression, have you heard people say, like maybe a kid says something profound or funny or clever,
sure,
and they say, "Oh, out of the mouths of babes."
Right.
Have you heard that expression?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
That comes from this verse. That's the King James version of this passage, "out of the mouths of babes." And so the way my translation reads is, "Have you never read from the lips of children and infants, you, Lord, have called forth praise?" The context is this was on the week before Jesus died and then rose again. It was Easter week, which is when we're recording this podcast, is the same time we're talking about this right now. It was that week. If you read it in Matthew's version, it seems like it came maybe Sunday afternoon, Palm Sunday. If you read Mark's version, it looks like it's on Monday. So it's connected with Palm Sunday, but it could be the very next day as far as the timing of it. But nonetheless, Jesus has cleared the temple, and then he heals a handful of people. And then these kids start singing out, "Hosanna to the Son of David," this incredible, beautiful praise from the Old Testament. And Jesus, you know, receives it.
Right.
As praise from him. They get criticized by the religious leaders because it sounds like they're recognizing him as the Messiah and as God, which they were, and they had a problem with this. And so that's when Jesus asked them the question, of course they're doing it. Haven't you ever read?
Right.
The Old Testament, Psalm 8, says that from the mouths of children and infants, you know, I've ordained praise, or I've called forth praise.
Sure.
And it was really kind of cool doing it Sunday because what we did, it was since the kids' choir was singing, we intentionally saved the kids' choir. Usually they come early in the service when we have them sing. We had them at the very end because after talking about this, it was so cool to have the kids sing.
Right.
Your kids were stars, by the way.
Well, Mike, or stars or stole the show. You know, it's a real fine line.
Stole the show, too. Yeah.
It's a real fine line. I am kind of bummed because, you know, shout out to Pastor Andrew's kids. His daughter has a lovely voice, and I was looking forward to hearing her, but she unfortunately got sick. So then I guess my son stepped up and, you know,
He was the understudy.
He was the understudy. Yeah, he was the understudy. Or just the willing participant to, you know, just go like, "Sure, I'll do it." You know what I mean? So, you know, I was a little bummed that we didn't get to hear her because she has a very lovely voice.
Yeah.
But, you know, there'll always be a next kids' choir performance, and hopefully we'll hear her again. So,
Felt like it cemented the message so well, though.
It really did.
Have the kids come up and sing after we spent a whole message talking about the value of children's praise and how much Jesus valued it and how important it was and why it becomes this model for us, and then have the kids come up and do it. And then I thought I was super clever because I then halfway through first service, it was early on in first service actually, our children's director said to me, "Hey, Doug, we got a kid's choir t-shirt for you too. Do you want it? And I go, oh, you know, maybe sure. I'll get it later, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And then I thought, wait a second. No, yeah, I do want it. Put it in my office and I'll come out at the end of the morning with the shirt on and say I'm joining the choir because I want to be a kid. We're all supposed to be childlike.
Sure.
It kind of backfired on me.
Really? Why?
Well, is this your take on it? Sure. This is my take, is that when I came out and did that first service, you know, people connected with it. It was fine and everything. But then the way I said it, I didn't mean it to come out this way. It sounded like I was saying we were all going to sing and do it. I was going to sing with the kids right then.
Oh, there was like a little bit of a pause.
Yeah, like the way that's I said funny. It sounded like I'm going to join the kids choir, and it just I could tell as it was coming out of my mouth, people are thinking, oh, he's going to
sing,
and then they wanted me to, and they're pulling out their video game, their phones and video, and I'm going, that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
and
that's
then
funny.
After the service, I had several people come up to me and say, oh, I thought you were going to sing.
Yeah.
You should have sung.
You should have.
I'm going, no, that's not going to happen.
I used to go to a church when I was younger, and the pastor was or used to be a worship leader, and he then became a senior pastor.
Uh-huh.
And as the band, we would have to be ready, because if he came up at the end,
And started singing.
We had to go for it, you know, because,
wow.
But, and like I said, he had a very lovely voice and he was a worship pastor mm-hmm. for a very long time before he transitioned into a senior pastor. But yeah, it kind of reminded me a little bit when you did come up and you said you were joining the choir. I was we might do this right now.
we might be. See, you even thought that.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, cool. Doug's going to sing. Like, we're going to do it, you know?
For the record, that will never happen. Okay. That will never happen.
Never say never.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Anyway, what is it about childlike faith that makes Jesus really honor these kids and lift them up and make them a model for us of what faith is all about? And how can we stay forever young?
Yeah.
Can we be childlike in our faith? Yes, it's true. With every birthday we get older, we can't go backwards. But according to Jesus, according to the Bible, even though we age physically, we can stay young spiritually.
Yeah.
With a kind of a childlike faith and a vibrant faith, a youthful faith. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? What does Jesus mean when he says that our faith is supposed to be like that of children? It certainly can't mean that we're supposed to be gullible or naive or ignorant or childish.
Right.
So what does it mean? And I'll be really interested in your input as we talk about this, because, you know, you've got three kids under seven,
yeah.
Three kids
yeah.
under seven.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is very vivid for you.
Yes, it is.
These are not just, you know, hypothetics. This is real life.
Right.
And I'm imagining there's some things about your kids that you go, there's nothing to model there whatsoever. There's nothing about that is, you know, a healthy example for the spiritual life. So it's not everything about being children. So what is it about being childlike that Jesus wants us to, you know, be an example to us?
Sure.
Jesus reinforced this with a verse in Matthew 18, 2, where... and I love this because this is the Message translation, but I think it makes it really fresh. He said, "Return to square one and start over like children. Whoever becomes simple and elemental again will rank high in God's kingdom." So Jesus clearly wants us to be childlike. What does that mean? What does that really look like?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the verse that Jesus is quoting when he kind of rebukes the religious leaders for not knowing their own Bibles, the verse that he's quoting is Psalm 8. And the verse there says this. It says, "Through the praise of children and infants, you have established a stronghold against your enemies to silence the foe and the avenger." We spent some time, and it's really beautiful to see how that verse fits into the larger context of Psalm 8, and you can catch it if you want to listen to the sermon online or listen to it again. But what I want to emphasize here in our podcast is just that this is this verse alone that Jesus quotes really amplifies what Jesus had in mind mm-hmm. and what he expected them as religious leaders to already kind of know, have learned over the years. But what's interesting is it's translated a little differently than the way Jesus says it in the New Testament. The wording is a little bit different. Why? Why is that? Well, the reason is because in Jesus's day, the Bible that they used, which would have only been the Old Testament, the Bible they used was called the Septuagint.
Right.
The Septuagint was a Greek translation because everybody spoke Greek. Mm-hmm. That was the common language of the day, the one that most people had access to, even if they had spoke different languages. So the Bible, their Hebrew Bible, was in Greek, and it was called the Septuagint. And that's the way the way Jesus quotes it is the way the Septuagint phrased it, mm-hmm. and also the way the religious leaders would have read it.
Right,
this is what
right.
they would have been familiar with. So it makes sense that Jesus would quote the passage based on the way they would have known it and understood it.
Right.
So that's why. But then, you know, the Greek and the Hebrew then give different nuances and a little different phraseology, and between the two, there's a little bit of a difference. But rather than seeing those differences as competitive, I actually see them as complementary. They really
sure.
enhance our understanding of what Jesus wanted us to know. The idea that praise from children, even infants, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've had kids that are infants, can they pray? You know, it's hard to imagine them praising God.
I know. Well, you know, Mando always says they're like potatoes, like in the first like 3 or 4 months, you know, because they don't really do anything.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that passage is, you know, I don't know, just the infant praising, but then there again too, like they do start to, you know, they start to recognize your face, they start to recognize sounds and things like that, and they get so excited, like you get the hero's welcome every time you get them from their crib or you pick them up or something, you know, you get that like that sense of joy of like, oh, I know you, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're my people, you know? So yeah, that sense of praise you get, I think, is mm-hmm. is what, you know, Jesus was talking about there, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I love that it goes all the way back to infants and potatoes, if we're going to use your phrase, but all the, from the phrase of children's and potatoes,
you've
established that's the Ryan translation of this verse, or the Amanda, translation. I don't know anybody that has witnessed the birth of their child.
Yeah.
Christian or non-Christian, believer or unbeliever, that doesn't talk about it as a miracle.
Right.
It's an absolute miracle. And then you see these little babies, you know, and they're so beautiful and so helpless, but so beautiful and so intricate, and their eyelashes and their fingers. And you just, it is, you know, it gives praise to God. Just you look at Psalm 8, as much as the stars in the sky and the heavens declare the glory of God, so does this precious miracle, this tiny infant baby.
Yeah.
And it's such a evidence of how intricate and delicate and precisely God has planned us and purposed us. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I love meeting first time parents. You know, I was at a restaurant the other night, and they were clearly, you know, I was there picking up food, right?
Yeah.
They're clearly, you know, out on a date, you know, and you know, the mom is standing
with the toddler or with the
newborn? No, she was still pregnant.
Oh, still pregnant.
But
okay.
Very, like, I mean, we were talking like, you know,
any day.
And so, you know, she's standing.
But you still didn't ask.
No, I didn't ask. No, of course not.
Of course,
no,
we know that.
No, yeah, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, but I could, you know, obviously tell she was very pregnant.
Right.
But I just loved getting to kind of, you know, I kind of broke the ice a little bit, and I was talking with them, and I just loved how excited they were, you know, and just like the first time parent excitement, you know, it's just something so great, you know, that they're like just excited to figure out like what the baby's going to look like and, you know, all the different things. And I was just like, it's so beautiful. It's such a miracle. And I don't know anything about them, you know, other than they're just expecting a baby, you know, and they were like, oh, I know. And it's like, you know, it's so exciting and this and that. I go, they're just so beautiful. Like, they're so beautiful. It's your baby. You get to, you know, raise it and teach it things and do all that stuff. And, you know? And I was just like, it's just a miracle. And they're like, do you have any advice? I go, no, just love the baby. Like, that's all you have to do. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. My only advice is enjoy this date night right now, because in the future you'll be like me picking up to-go food while the kids are at home.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. 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 It was funny too, because they were like, how many do you have? I was like, too many. It's like too many. No, I'm joking, but you know,
yeah,
but yeah, it was just like, I just love that excitement of, you know, not knowing what's ahead other than they're going to have, you know, a little baby, you know? So,
yeah, you know. That's great. That's great. Well, Jesus, you know, commends children and infants as this really model for us. And here's the idea that I kind of wanted to bring home from the message and maybe underscore a little bit more here in the podcast, is that why does Jesus do that with children? Well, because the youngest among us are closest to their original design. Their place in the scheme of things is more aligned than the rest of humanity. Grown-ups are who've been, you know, kind of got the wear and tear of sin, living in this broken world. These beautiful infants and young children seem more closer to God's plan, closer to God's design.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to be careful in the message, and I want to be careful right now to make sure that I made the distinction to say it doesn't mean that they're not sinful, and any parent knows that, you know, with their, you can see the naughty side coming out there. It doesn't mean they're not sinful, because all of us, original sin is something that taints us from conception, that taints us from birth. But it does mean that they've had less time to have the brokenness of this world, you know, wear off on them.
Right.
And right. I didn't want to say they are perfect, but they're not perfect by any means. We all know that.
Yes.
But they're closer to God's original design, less impacted by a broken world. They're not necessarily godly or not necessarily always good, or always a model, but they can be a model. There's something about that and what they represent.
Yeah.
So it's not being childish, it's not being like everything about a child, but there's certain things that they represent.
Right.
At least as conceptually,
yes,
that are translated to our life. And I want to share those things. There are four, what I'm calling four traits that we can learn from children. The first thing is that they trust without cynicism. And they haven't become cynics yet.
No.
They haven't become jaded by this world.
Right.
It feels like a lot of adults have trust issues, and maybe understandably for good reasons, or for unfortunately bad reasons, bad things that have happened to them that cause them to have trust issues. And so children are naturally trusting until this world has taught them otherwise. They are naturally that way. And so there's, to me, that becomes a great example why childlike faith is a model for us, because we too can trust that God knows what he's doing. And I love this too. Children don't need to understand why.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to, you know, understand all the ins and outs of how it's going to happen. They just, you know, you could tell them, hey, dinner's going to be ready in 20 minutes, and they don't need to know what's on the stove and what's cooking how long rice takes to cook or anything like that.
Sure,
you know, they don't need to know all the information.
Right.
They just, they trust you because the parents said that. And
we
can learn something from kids that way in our relationship with God. We never know everything, what he's doing, but we can trust him and try to guard against that cynicism and that jadedness that comes in.
Right. Well, I think it's also too, like, they haven't, you know, I kind of look at, like, especially my children, like, they're very much in, like, a very, like, the bubble that that Mandy and I have created for them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like they go to their school. Here's their sports team. Here's their dance crew. You know what I mean? Here's their church. It's like, you know, and then here's your family. And, you know, so it's like, it's like you kind of create those bubbles. And then once you get older, you start to create your own bubbles. And then all of a sudden, like, they pop, you know what I mean? Like, because now you're not in this relationship now where, you know, mom and dad are always going to be around, or people at church or whatever community they're in are most of the time, those adults are there to help them, you know, along the way, you know, and the older they get, you know, you kind of start to realize not everybody has the same you know, values or treats people, you know, not respectfully and things like that. So
yeah, that's a healthy transition for a parent to make, to help guide them from the kind of the young child bubble to being able to interact in a healthy way and a godly way in a world that doesn't genuinely honor him, honor God.
Right.
Help them transition. That's the challenge of parenting. But you know, you kind of, there's something really precious about those early years.
Yes, there is.
Where
yes.
There is that natural trust and less cynicism.
Yes.
Or no cynicism.
Right, right.
Less jaded.
Right. I know. Yeah. You said to, I think you either said earlier today or you said it in your message too, where it's like, not so the naive part of being, you know, I don't know if you're going to touch on it or not.
No.
So like, not so much like the naive part of being a child where it's like, we just, you know, just accept everything for what it is, you know, but there is something that is so sweet and is naive about children, you know, where my daughter thinks they're, so at our Chick-fil-A, we go to Chick-fil-A a lot, at our Chick-fil-A, they put one of the, you know, crew members in a big cow costume.
Yeah.
Okay. She is convinced that at our store, they've convinced a real cow how to walk on two legs. Okay. and Mandy and I just don't have the heart. And we've tried to tell her, like, it's a costume, like how you wear a costume for Halloween or you wear a costume for dance or whatever, right? Like, you're not really Sleeping Beauty. Like, it's a costume, you know? Yeah. She is convinced. Like, she does not believe us. She's convinced.
I love that.
That it's a real cow.
Yeah.
You know, and that they taught it how to walk because it doesn't talk. So she'll go up to it and start talking, and it's a cast member. So they're supposed to, you know, kind of.
They can't tell. They don't talk back.
Right.
Cows don't talk.
And so she's like,
apparently they walk on their hind legs, but they don't talk.
She's convinced that our Chick-fil-A has convinced or has taught that cow how to walk on two legs. And her brother is like, you know, he's a little bit older. So he's like, no, Evie, like, it's a person.
Yeah.
And she's like, nope, it's a real cow. Like, she's convinced herself it's a real cow.
Well, that's a perfect illustration of trusting without cynicism.
Yes,
you know, that's what, that kids can kind of become a model for us that.
Yes, very much so. You know,
A second thing that I think we learn from kids is humility. Back in that culture, kids were really low as far as any kind of recognition or honor or status in society. They were really discounted. But you know, Jesus, as he often did, he just loved to reverse culture's values. He loved to elevate those things that culture discounted and discount those things that culture elevated.
Right.
And so this is a perfect example where he made children who were kind of discounted or even disparaged in that culture, he elevated them.
Right.
And he brought them up. And so for us, childlike faith just is that idea that we are, there's value in humility. There's value in just humbling ourselves. Like, children were naturally in a humble position in that society, acknowledging our need for God and acknowledging our need for grace, our need for him to provide for us. I feel like grownups tend to want to take credit and responsibility for everything.
Right.
And children naturally are more humble in that, in the sense of just realizing, you know, that they need help from others.
Yes. Very much so. You know, you I'm in the stage of the, you know, having my name called 45 different times, you know?
Yeah.
Daddy.
Yeah.
It's just like all I hear all day long, you know, they need help with something, you know what
I mean? I think it's so endearing the way you almost always answer, yes, love. It's so nice, you know, that you do that. But it's probably 24/7, you know, it's all the time there. Someone's calling out for you maybe a couple, you know, a couple hours in the middle of the night is about the only time it's, you know, not happening.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Mandy taught me that. She always answers the kids that way. And I think it changes your your frame of mind, you know, if I'm in the middle of something, you know, and I always, you know, I go, you know, I'll say like, you know, they'll call, I hear them calling me and I'm like, yes, love. Like, you know, it's like, and I feel like it kind of just goes like, it takes your level from here and just brings it instantly down where I go, okay, they might need something. You know what I mean? They might need some help. If I can't, you know, verbally tell them how to do something, then I have to, you know, physically help them, you know.
So. But can't we learn something from that? You know,
for
the
sure.
idea that we need to come to the Lord and ask for help.
For sure.
We need to be dependent
for
on
sure.
him, just as children are naturally
right.
dependent.
Right. Well, I think he answers us like that too. You know what I mean?
He does. He
you
does.
Know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yes, love.
Yes. He's like, yes, not, well, what do you need now? That's not how he answers us. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
If people get nothing more than that, that's a great one.
Yeah.
Thirdly, in addition to those two, I think the children are... they have a natural sincerity about them. They're real. They're honest. They're genuine. They're authentic. They're not trying to be anything other than who they are.
Right.
They're comfortable with who they are. And I think that is something that God longs for us to have, this authentic faith with him. Now, not to put on pretenses, not to put on masks. If you look at the ones that Jesus was most harsh on in the Gospels, it's those who were playing games, who were trying to be more spiritual than they were. And those are the ones that Jesus had the harshest criticisms for. And so in the same way, God wants us to just be sincere, be true who we are, to be honest about our faults as well as our strengths, and to live kind of this life in an unfiltered way. I think kids are good at that, and adults not so much so.
Right.
So the statistics show actually that kids laugh a lot more than adults. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Kids, we laugh way more as children than we do as adults. And I think that's because they're more comfortable with life and who they are and what's happening. And they're not, you know, trying to, you know, manage everything and living somewhere else in their brain. And they're able to just be in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun.
And then finally, kids are, they're, I think the Bible honors children in the way it does because they're more receptive. They're soft towards God. They're ready to follow him, even when the path is uncertain. We know that people, percentage-wise, become believers. They're more likely to become believers the younger they are. The as you get older, it becomes harder because you've kind of set your course and you've kind of developed your defenses against God, and you've built your case. And it's the younger you are, the more open and more receptive you are. And that's certainly what we saw in the story there that we talked about on Sunday, the episode from Jesus' life where the religious leaders didn't recognize who Jesus was and the kids did. I called this their spiritual perception. They had a greater spiritual perception as children to what Jesus was doing and what God was at work doing than these grown-ups did. And I think that's another reason why Jesus honors children, is because they have this receptivity that we as grown-ups can lose.
Right. Well, even Jesus himself, you know, when he was a child, you know, and he got lost, you know, and then he answers his mom like, well, where did you think I was going to be?
Yeah.
You know, I'd be in my father's house, you know? So
he's
just backing up everything that he did, you know, even as a child, you know, that he still was in his father's house. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Isn't that something? That's a great, great observation. So in the end, children can teach us to be trusting, humble, sincere, and receptive before God. I think that's why Jesus champions us being childlike in our faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
All right. Well, we said we'd end with some listener questions.
Okay.
I actually have one question for this week that came in since we asked people to send them in. And it was a response to when you and I were talking.
Sure.
Last week, we were talking about how there's passages in the Bible that can be sort of inscriptive for us. They speak to us on a deeper level. I shared mine from Psalm 46, and then this listener wrote back and said, for him, it is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 is that passage for him. So I thought that was a great comment on what we said. And then he added a question, and it's a super spiritual question.
Okay.
So are you ready for this?
Give me one second. I'm ready.
You're ready for it?
Okay.
all right, I don't know what you're doing there, but I'll trust that that's gonna make.
I wanted to make a note. I wanted to make a bookmark for his verse because I didn't know it by heart.
Oh, okay. Proverbs 3:5-6 is that's the one about trust the Lord with all your heart.
Yes, it just came. Yeah,
so good.
Yeah,
so good.
So good.
All right.
Good.
So here's the super spiritual question, following up that famous proverb.
Okay.
Speaking of tacos, what's your go-to taco place? For me, it's Taco Taco in Poway, best carnitas tacos I've ever eaten.
Wow.
So I guess we were talking about John the Baptist, and
right.
I talked about how I bumped into
Jean-Baptiste, yes.
Who was our church. His name means John the Baptist.
Sure.
At a taco place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess that was a big takeaway.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a big takeaway, tacos.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Yeah.
So by the way, Taco Taco in Poway is not a sponsor. We
yeah,
maybe they should be.
Maybe, I would not hate that.
Maybe that's the next step in our podcast to get Taco.
Get a taco
shop to be our sponsor. All right. So Ryan, you haven't seen this question yet.
No,
this
I have
is
not.
First time you're hearing it.
Yeah.
What is your go-to taco place?
Go-to taco place. What a great question. So here's the thing. The thing is that I used to be I used to be a jalapenos fan.
Yeah.
That used to be my favorite one to go to. But I think recently I've really gone to the TJ Tacos in Escondido.
Never been there, heard about them.
Oh, only because I'm in a kick right now where I like adobada tacos.
Yeah,
it's a different way to marinate the pork, and I'm obsessed with them right now. Those are my favorite tacos.
And so they do a good job.
They do a great job. Great job. Yeah, you should definitely go. It's worth it. Yeah,
Abadabo, is that the ones that they carve from the?
Yes, it's a big piece.
Yes. And then it's on a turn.
Yes,
like a spike that turns, and then they carve it off of that.
And it's all fresh. So they have that whole thing there.
Yeah,
and you walk up, and they
slice it on the spot.
They slice it right on the spot, and they put this like, it's like a greenish salsa kind of on top.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, it's awesome. Yeah, those are my favorite. So TJ Tacos and Esco is my favorite. Yeah.
All right. Well, Richard is the one that sent this question.
Yeah,
Richard, for me, I am going to throw out there Yesenia's.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not?
Right.
That's where I had been last week when I was talking about bumping into someone for tacos.
Right.
And the reason I like them is because they serve lengua tacos.
Yeah.
Lengua, for those who don't know, is tongue, beef tongue. And it sounds a little bit exotic, maybe a little bit out of your comfort zone, but once you, they're so good.
They're very good.
So good. Lengua tacos. Yes, and Cindy's less excited about them because sometimes you can see the little taste buds.
Yes, you can.
On the meat. And she's going, it's like, I don't know. It's like the taco that tastes you back.
Yes. It,
but they're good. They're good tacos. Really good tacos. That's my go-to place. Not a sponsor, but maybe we can get them to be a sponsor.
Maybe we can get TJ's or Yesenia's or Taco. Taco Taco's great too. So
Taco. Well done.
Yeah.
So great question. If you have a question, spiritual or random, that you would like to ask, send them to unhurriedpodcast@gmail.com and we will do our best to get it in this segment. Hopefully a few people do, and we can make this an ongoing segment.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope this has been encouragement to you to think more about what it means to have a childlike faith and how the kids in our lives can actually be models for us. Not in everything, but in certain ways, they become great models to us of what Jesus expects from us, hopes from us, desires in us as we follow him. Again, this has been a deeper dive into a sermon I gave on Matthew 21 called Stay Forever Young. If you want to find that online at greenvalleychurch.com, you can find it. It's part of the series Jesus Wants to Know. And we're so grateful that you've joined us today. Thank you, Ryan, for all your part is always so significant and such a great contribution.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
Thanks to our enthusiastic viewers and listeners. Until next time, this has been Unhurried. With me, your host, I'm lifting my unhurried cup as I say this. I look forward to talking to you soon.